The importance of all this is the concert that's taking place tomorrow night at Showalter Auditorium on the EWU campus, featuring the Mount St. Helens Symphony. And so John Marshall, the conductor of the EWU Orchestra, climbed any mountains lately?
This has been a mountain to climb, working on this piece.
Of course it is, because you've... every now and then we kind of tell it like it is. You've been doing a rebuilding process for 2 or 3 years with the EWU Symphony Orchestra, doing some smart programming and focusing on things, but really aiming toward the big full orchestra pieces. Isn't that safe to publicly say?
Yes, and especially during the winter and spring quarters, mm-hmm. that's when we do symphony orchestra. Yeah. Fall quarters is typically just string orchestra. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of Baroque music mm-hmm. at that time. But yes, so we reserve the winter and spring concerts for full orchestra.
Yeah, and so this is certainly a big one, as any symphony about a mountain should be. So let's kind of circle the wagons on a whole bunch of things about the Mount St. Helens Symphony. Was there any particular reason you chose it?
Well, the main reason was that this is 2020 is the 40th anniversary of the eruption, so it seemed like... a good round number to be performing the symphony. I'll have to wait another 10 years for another big round number. But 40 years just seemed like a good time. And coincidentally, the Mac Museum has a display on right now of Pompeii and also kind of a side room about Mount St. Helens. So it's been a good, nice collaboration between the two.
The good thing about their Mount St. Helens exhibit, because I've seen it, is that they have opportunities for people to add their own memories. And what anybody who ever runs into anybody that was in Spokane in 1980 is, don't you dare ask them for their Mount St. Helens story unless you have 5 minutes.
Absolutely. And I even have my own Mount St. Helens Symphony, but I was growing up in the Chicago area, so it was more like 3 days later when we could see the remnants of the ash cloud coming over the Midwest.
Okay, I'll get mine done real quickly. I was playing a concert the night before in Seattle, and I was driving back to Spokane, and I heard that it had gone off, and I saw this cloud to my right all the way driving back to Spokane, and I drove into a dark underground basement venue, driving in a Technicolor world, played a concert, and walked out of that venue into a monochromatic world. So it was dramatic for all of us.
And yes, anybody that I ask, always there's always a story. They can always remember what they were doing, where they were at that time. Some Spokane Symphony members I've talked to living on the South Hill heard the boom. Mm-hmm. All the way over in Spokane area.
Yeah. So it is a big part of our heritage and our culture, and those of us who have a little can of Mount St. Helens ash somewhere among the garden supplies and all of those interesting things. And so that's the fun part of it. But let's get into it a little bit as a piece of music. What have you discovered in this trip into the Mount St. Helens Symphony?
I think it's one of Hovhaannes' most compelling works. He wrote a lot of music. He wrote a lot of symphonies, I think almost 100 symphonies. So he's kind of in that Haydn category. Mm-hmm. This symphony especially is very personal. It's in three movements. The first movement is really a sonic representation of Mount St. Helens before the eruption. It's very symmetrical. It's very majestic. The second movement then is a musical portrayal of Spirit Lake, and it's a very evocative, very mysterious, lot of, we'll say, Asian colors, because he's using a pentatonic scale, and almost sounds of kind of a gamelan, where he's trying to show the ripples in the water and the beauty of Spirit Lake, again, before the eruption.
So I think it would be nice for our travelogue here, because I have queued up just right in the middle of that second movement that invokes Spirit Lake, where we're going to hear a little bit of those more gamelan sounds and then hear it move into that lovely flute solo, then flute duet section. So let's hear about a minute of the middle of the Spirit Lake movement. Thank you. So there's a taste of the middle movement of Spirit Lake. I don't think that Hovhaannes wrote any Harry Truman into it, as far as I can know. That wonderful curmudgeon who was not going to leave, and so he went up with the mountain, as it were.
Yeah, no, I don't hear any Harry Truman in this movement. It's lots of percussion ensemble and only pizzicato strings. No, they don't use their bows at all. And then this lovely woodwind duets and solos that are going on throughout the movement.
And so that's the way it builds up to it. Before we talk about the last movement, let's kind of talk a little bit more about Hovhaannes and our intersections with him. You said you had a childhood one.
I met Alan Hovhaannes. I don't remember exactly what year, but I think it was late 70s. I think I was around 10 years old. He was a guest artist at my father's college, the College of DuPage, outside of Chicago. I know the orchestra there was playing some of his music, and he was there for a few days, maybe a week. And what I remember most about that time was that he and his wife came over to our house one evening for dinner, and I remember even getting out my cello and playing it for him at that time. I don't remember exactly what I played, but I remember him being a very patient listener. He was very grandfatherly, tall, very thin, mm-hmm. And a very gracious listener.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then I had a similar experience a few years later when the Spokane Falls Brass Band was playing with the Olympia Symphony, and the first half of the concert was our featured thing, where we were featured in with the orchestra accompanying us, and then the second half was the Mount St. Helens Symphony, and Mr. Hovhaannes was there with his wife, an Asian woman who had a really unique, very, very high voice, mm-hmm. and for whom he wrote a very unique high voice pieces. And again, I remember this sweet, kind, gentle man.
And I think this will be only the second time the Mount St. Helens Symphony has been played in the Spokane area. I think the mm-hmm. Youth Symphony played it back in 2003. As far as I know, I've asked several, mm-hmm. some of the old-time Spokane Symphony members, and nobody recalls that the Spokane Symphony has ever performed it.
Well, by now I'm the old-timer around here, so I can definitively say that that's true, because I would have noticed if it had happened. So it's really a neat opportunity. Then there's the... Obviously, one knows if somebody's going to write a Mount St. Helens Symphony after 1980, it has to have the explosion, inevitably. But then I think what's fun about it is what it does beyond the obligatory explosion. So kind of talk about that.
Well, as Alan Hovhaannes writes in some of his program notes, the third movement is a sonic pictorial of that morning of May 18th, 1980. It was a beautiful sunny morning, and you hear that reflected in the strings and the horns. And yet, among this beautiful writing in the strings and the horn, he has the bass players play just very indiscriminate notes, very low, representing the earthquake that's about to happen on that morning.
So here's what we're going to do. We're not going to play the explosion. We don't dare do that. But let us do the opening of the third movement, which John just described to you, John Marshall, the conductor of the EWU Symphony, who's playing this piece tomorrow night. So here comes this opening for about the first couple minutes.
Thank you.
And we're certainly not going to anticipate the explosion. One can only have one explosion. But that was the opening of the third movement of the Havana's Mount St. Helens Symphony. So then going back to John Marshall, then kind of talk about what he says about it or with it or something beyond the explosion.
Well, I'm going to talk a little bit about the explosion itself because,
sure,
again, I think Havana's does a magnificent job of showing this musically. It is loud, it is primal, it's very chaotic, and that's about the best way I can describe how he represents the eruption. But and as all this chaos goes on, eventually in the movement comes back this beautiful chorale theme played by the entire orchestra, representing the rebirth, the regrowth that occurred at Mount St. Helens almost immediately afterwards. Mm-hmm. And my family has been back to Mount St. Helens twice. And even between those few years, we were just amazed at the difference that we saw in the rebirth of that area.
Have you done both sides, both the west and the east side?
We spent a couple of days going around the entire mountain.
Oh, yeah.
And going to all the visitor centers.
Because what I've so advocated is the loveliness of the east side. Mm-hmm. It's much less Disney-fied, if one may say that, and where you can really feel it. And just even that lovely mountain road up that got paved, and you turn a corner and you see green trees, turn another corner and see devastation. It's really a fascinating trip up the east side.
It's truly amazing, awe-inspiring to look at visually, to study geologically. It's been a few years since we've been there, so Lynn and I have been talking about returning again this summer to Mount St. Helens.
Yeah, and so that's the Mount St. Helens Symphony, and you're doing some present, and again, it's tomorrow night, 7:30 at Showalter Hall, Showalter Auditorium. You're doing some presentational things relative to that performance. Talk about that.
Right, since it is a 40th anniversary commemoration, I'm having two of my longtime friends and former Eastern faculty members come and talk a little bit about their own personal experiences with Mount St. Helens. Bob Gibbs, a former physics teacher, climbed and summited Mount St. Helens before the eruption, and he has some pictures of himself and his other climbers at the top of Mount St. Helens that we're going to be showing. And then Mike Folsom, a retired geology professor, he's going to be talking more about just the Cascade Range and kind of the events that came about for Mount St. Helens, and talking about how the ash cloud was dispersed over eastern Washington.
So that's the main event, the Mount St. Helens Symphony, tomorrow night at 7:30 at Showalter. But how are you going to get there in the first parts of the concert?
Well, Mount St. Helens Symphony is pretty intense work. It's a longer work. It's a little bit more than half hour long. So to start out with, we're going to start the concert with something very light, very bubbly, the Pizzicato Polka by the Strauss Brothers, a piece that any of you who have listened to the New Year's Day concerts probably have heard before. But we're going to start out the concert with something shorter and lighter. And then my wife, Lynn Feller Marshall, she's going to play a beautiful romance by Edward Elgar for bassoon and orchestra.
And the good thing about that is that all week on Exploring Music every day at 3:00 this week, it's about Edward Elgar. So you can get, by the time you go tomorrow night, you'll be deeply involved in Edward Elgar if you hear this afternoon's performance. So that's the EWU Symphony Orchestra concert tomorrow night at 7:30. So thanks a lot, and thanks for doing this great project this year.
Thank you, Vern, for having me, and I hope everyone can come out and hear the concert tomorrow night.
7:30 tomorrow night.